Oh, there he is. All right. Hi, everybody. It's the Dystopian Dance Party podcast.
Yay.
When was the last time? I'm Zach and this is Callie. Let me get that away because I always, I always just launch into it and forget to introduce ourselves. But also, if you listen to this, you know who we are. Like, there's such a short list of people who listen. It's
right. And I had blocked one of them today on Twitter. So
the list got even shorter.
Yeah.
When was the last time that we've done this? Because it's been a long time.
So it was when we did the dirt.
Okay, so that was what?
The like dirt, but the dirt movie. Well, I looked at, because I never sign into Skype unless we're doing this, and I looked at our last Skype call, which was the only Skype call I have, and it was from March 27th.
Okay, So yeah, it's been a little while.
yeah.
But we thought it was important to reconvene because something very important happened last month. So it wasn't that important because it took us a month to to get around to making this, but we saw Kiss. We saw Kiss in concert, and I just thought that
the first time both of us have seen them in concert, potentially last,
probably the last. Yeah, I mean, allegedly this is their final tour. We'll have to see. Last time they announced it was their final tour, it was an elaborate ploy to fire the other two members of the band. So we'll have to see. But I mean, I think maybe this is naive of me, but I actually think that this might be their last tour because they are old as shit.
It was very questionable quality.
they're definitely showing their age, and even they have admitted that they're not up to the standards that they used to be up to. And so when Kiss admits mediocre at best, like
standards are already pretty low.
Right. So you know, when even Kiss is like, we're not able to put on the show that we, or I think the way they put it is like, we won't be able to put on the show that we want to put on in the near future. You know, that says to me that like, it really is the end. But
maybe they were specifically referring to Tommy and Eric.
Yeah, right.
And they're firing them. They're like, we're still great. Yeah. I don't know.
That's also a possibility. I just felt like we had to see them because so much of we've been talking about Kiss for over 2 years now, right? When was the...
Oh my God. I mean...
And I'm just talking
whenever,
about
whenever it started. Whenever... Right. Well, okay. So I think it was like 2016 that we started the books.
Yeah, it was like November.
I want to say...
September, November 2016. Yeah. And you know, since then we've talked about other things, but I feel like the only time we get any kind of YouTube hits is when we talk about Kiss.
But not only that, but literally like Kiss, every biography we've read, Kiss is in.
Right. Recurring motif.
I read Grace Jones' biography and she mentioned Kiss. Like, I literally can't escape from them.
Yeah.
I have already read George Clinton's book, but that's going to be our next book club book. And Kiss is heavily mentioned in that.
Yeah, Kiss was in Rick James. Even when we try not to talk about Kiss, we end up talking about Kiss. So this
is David Lee Roth too. Yeah. Everything we've read and The Dirt.
Right.
Gene Simmons was mentioned in that.
Right. This just felt like it was important closure, basically. We had to mark this occasion of Kiss retiring by going to see them. And it was our last chance. And, you know, as much shit as we talk about Kiss, we do like them enough to sit through a 2-hour concert by them.
I love Kiss. Honestly, yeah. I've been listening to the playlist that you made when you listen to every single output, their whole entire discography. I've been listening to you wanted the better one because there are two, the light side. And a song would come on, I'd be like, oh man, I love this song. I completely forgot about that. I actually love Kiss. I just also acknowledge that they're idiotic.
We also love to hate them. It's complicated duality. Relationship.
It's duality.
And I will say, it was not even in the top 20 best concerts I've ever seen. You know, it was
in the top 50.
I agree. But it wasn't bad. How do I describe
it? It was certainly entertaining.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We've been talking about Kiss for a little over 2 years, or just about 2 years now. Just about 3 years, because it was March. It was September 2016 that we did the Gene Simmons podcast. But we've been.
Were we talking about Kiss before that, though, or was that the year that we did the playlist?
I think that might have been the same year, or maybe it was I think it was the year after. I think
I honestly feel like we've been talking about Kiss for as long as Dystopian Dance Party has existed.
I think that's probably, they are one of the, if you look at our tag clouds, they're one of the largest. They're
basically probably, Eddie Trunk.
Yeah, exactly. a less popular, less successful Eddie Trunk. even before we did the blog, I remember when I was in high school or college, we would watch. When did the Kissology DVDs come out? Because
That came out, I think, when I was in high school. So you had already gone to college. So we were watching those, and then even before the Kissology came out, I discovered a lot of their hair metal videos because I'm constantly perusing hair metal on YouTube even to this day. And I found all of those. And then we found Rock the Nation.
Yes.
And Rock the Nation is really what I was comparing this tour to, because they're the same fucking set list and they're basically the same show.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was, that's what I was, starting to get to. Rock the Nation was 2006, 2000. I mean, maybe I can actually look this up.
I want to say it's 2005.
Yeah, it was definitely, 2005. Yeah, you're right. So Kiss Rock the Nation, that was early days of Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer.
Can I also just say that Kiss, just as a sidebar, because I looked up Rock the Nation and I forgot that there was a Montrose song called Rock the Nation. Kiss just fucking steals from everyone. I was literally just talking about how Gene Simmons tries to co-opt the rock symbol that Ronnie James Dio brought into the public and everything. And taking fucking Sammy Hagar songs, and they just are these. But yeah. Then they don't like say like, oh yeah, I was inspired by this or whatever. They literally, or Paul Stanley will kind of like in his book, he talked about kind of like what he got inspired.
Right. The songs that he ripped out, like Free, All Right Now was, you know, Hotter Than Hell.
Right. Yeah. And I personally believe that, what's that Paul Stanley song? The one that was on South Park.
Live to Win?
Yeah, Live to Win. Live to Win is a blatant ripoff of It's My Life by Bon Jovi. Yeah. If you listen to it point for point, I don't know if I talked about this in the Paul Stanley podcast, but it's like a rewrite of the same song. Yeah. But anyway, that was just a sidebar that kids are like excellent thieves. But
right.
They're excellent at stealing a lot of things, but not excellent at like making it their own.
They don't it doesn't cohere together in anything interesting. It's
right.
It's,
yeah.
They're not like, you know, the stereotype about David Bowie, for example, is that he's like a magpie, you know, and Kiss are too, but there's just no artistry when they put it together.
They're more like those, like they're like parrots.
Yeah.
Paul Stanley even sounds like a parrot. Right.
So Rock the Nation, like we watch Rock the Nation a lot. It was like ridiculous that to me, that was like peak, you know, we would watch the Kissology videos and they were silly, but they were good shows. Rock the Nation was so goofy. Like that's like peak, you know, Gene Simmons dangling from a rope, limply from a rope, being swung back and forth over the audience. And that was almost 15 years ago now. And the show that we saw at the Jiffy Lube Live in Bristow, Virginia.
Bristow!
We knew because he yelled Bristow. Paul Stanley yelled Bristow probably upwards of 50 times that night. It was almost exactly like everything. Everything was the same. Like, you know, the thing where Gene, you know, like I said, just kind of like swinging like a pendulum over the crowd. Paul getting on the, he jumps up on the, you know, Tarzan rope basically, and goes to the back of the stage. And then he plays I Was Made for Loving You on the little stage in the back of the house. It was
not before like asking you to shout his name. For like, he like asks you like, I'm not gonna come out there unless you invite me out there or whatever the hell he says.
And right.
Like, oh, is he a vampire? Yes, we invite.
Now, Bristow, I can't come out there and have you close the door, slam it in my face. So I can't come out unless you really want me to come out there. Okay, let's try it again. I'll count to three. One, two, three! Really, really close. But I can even see here everybody's not doing it. I need everybody. Because if you don't, we'll still play for you, but I can't come out there. So, one more try. I think the third time's the charm. Three! You know what? I'm coming out there to see ya!
I have two things to say. One is about Paul Stanley and his like the way he shouts the name of whatever city they're in.
Right.
So in Rock the Nation, he was like just belting DC out.
Yeah, it had
like,
to be the most times anyone has ever said the word DC, like ever.
So I think on People Let Me Get This Off My Chest, they played Stockholm at one point. And I at work, I put away makeup and there's some lip gloss, like NYX lip gloss that's they're all named after cities. And there's one, Stockholm. And whenever I put that away, I think, Stockholm! Like literally every time I look at the lip gloss, that goes, but that like sears through my head like a hot knife through butter. The other thing that I was gonna say the thing about him flying over the audience and having to be invited.
Right.
But, it's just insufferable. Like, what? Just fucking fly across the audience.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're gonna do it no matter what. Like, I know that he says that we have to tell him, but I mean, of course he's gonna do it. Like, just get it over with. We all want to go home. It's a
yeah. What does he do over there? He goes over. It's Love Gun.
Yeah. So oh, that's right. A Love Gun, and then I Was Made for Loving You.
And it's so stupid because
which I think was the same as in 2005. Like how can you not change the set list at all? And I mean, Kiss, they like to spin this as like, oh, we're the people's band, and you know, like we know we're gonna play the hits because that's what the fans want.
They didn't play Read My Body, so clearly they weren't representing me.
Right. I feel like that's how they get you though, because like if we want Kiss deep cuts, we're gonna have to go see them on one of those fucking cruises. And I feel like the day that we go on the Kiss cruise, it's gonna be like a suicide pact situation.
I was gonna say, like, if I go on a Kiss cruise, I'm not coming back. I'm not living with it.
It's a one-way ticket.
They play Read My Body, and then I'm like, all right, just jump in the sea.
Yeah.
That's all I needed here. Bye.
Yeah. So if we ever announce that if we do a podcast that's like, we're going to go on a Kiss cruise, then you know what's going to happen. Like that's, we've decided to end it as a unit. It was striking how similar it was to like every Latter Day Kiss show that I've seen. So it was sort of like there weren't really any surprises.
It was just like it was basically Rock the Nation, but worse.
Right.
Because 15 years have not been signed on either of their vocals.
Right. Oh yeah. It was rough. There was a lot of I'm in the category. There's two kinds of people. There's people who think that Paul Stanley. Yeah.
This sounds like a Paul Stanley banter. Bristow!
No. Let me tell you, there's two kinds of people.
No. There's two kinds of people.
There's people who think that Paul Stanley used to have a good voice, and now he doesn't, you know, now, and there's people who think Paul Stanley never had a good voice. And I am of the latter category. If you go back and listen, like, obviously his voice used to be better. Like that's not in dispute. But if you go back and listen to like I Want You from Rock and Roll Over, like this is a young man.
Here's what that, because I was just listening to that. That sounds like when you plug your ears and sing into a microphone, like with your eyes squinted closed, and you're like, okay, I think that sounded okay. And then you listen to it back and you're just like, whatever.
Yeah, he was never at best a capable singer. That's the nicest thing I have to say about Paul Stanley's vocals.
Because he had a good like rock voice when he was doing certain things.
Right.
Songs on the first album, like he sounds fine, but he was like way too ambitious about stuff. He either goes like he tries to like do like Steve Marriott.
Like
vocal range stuff, or he tries to like sing softly. He can't do either. Like he just can't do one thing, and that's fine. I mean, like there's a lot of like, David Lee Roth isn't a great singer. He's just good at what he does. Right. Like
he's a yeller. He's just good at yelling and whooping. Like, you know, he's good at communicating that it's party time. And I feel like that is, I mean, those are the two inspirations for Roxco, the Rock and Roll Clown. So, like, Paul Stanley and David Lee Roth, that's what he shouldn't be aspiring to anything more than that. So it was rough because even in the 70s, like, he vastly overestimated his abilities. And, you know, so you could just, the strain was very, very present. it was tough.
One, you can sing this with us. I tell you, when we all get that power going, nothing can beat it, nothing can top it. This one comes from an album called Sonic Boom. It's really easy to sing this one. It's called Say Yeah, and it goes like this. I'll go, let me hear you say yeah, yeah.
Even just shouting Bristol, which I'm like, you really don't have to shoot Bristol that much. We know where we are.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was really like going in there expecting him to rep Bristow, Virginia. You know, like I was honestly kind of, I was impressed that he said Bristow and not DC or, you know, like Fairfax, or because it's out in the middle. I mean, it's in Northern Virginia.
But
it's in
very the middle of accurate. Fucking-
Yeah, yeah, he definitely wanted us to know that he knew the name of the city that they were performing in. So, you know, I guess that counts for something. But it was a little rough to hear sometimes. Like musically, they sounded pretty good. You know, the song sounded. It wasn't like at no point other than a couple of moments with the voice where I was like, ooh, you know, at no point was I like, this is embarrassing. They need to give it up, you know?
Right.
So that's my praise for the show that I wasn't embarrassed on their behalf. I also wasn't like excited. Like it was.
Oh, I got excited when they started playing Crazy, Crazy Nights.
Oh yeah.
And how can you not get excited about that? It starts out with a whoop and like that force fun guitar thing.
Right. Yeah. Riff. It's like right up there with Hot Legs by Rod Stewart. It starts like really trying to let people know that you're rocking, you're ready to rock, you know. Right. Those were honestly the moments that I was like most excited, when the like hair metal songs, because I didn't expect those as much as.
And also their hair metal songs are actually fun. I was thinking about this too, like in the 80s, they were actually like, I mean, most of Kiss's songs are like supposed to be fun and supposed to be a party, but a lot of their songs just sound like fucking dirges. Like they're laboriously playing this riff really low, and it'll be about getting a blowjob, but even like that doesn't sound fun. Like they aren't fun. But like Heaven's on Fire, Lick It Up, those are actually fun songs.
Right.
But Ladies in Waiting, just so boring.
No band has made the idea of like, you know, casual sex with a lot of strangers sound as unappealing and as like drudgery as they do. You know, it's like, it sounds like this like dour chore that they have to go through.
And the women do too.
Right. Like, yeah, it's like I would understand if it was from the woman's perspective. Like, you know. But you'd think that Gene Simmons would be like excited about this, since it's what he builds his whole, personality around.
Even like when they're supposed to be boasting about their sexual prowess or something, it completely misses the mark. Like Mr. Speed is just like, what the fuck is that about? Yeah. I don't get it. Like, unless like you quickly bring the woman to orgasm, but that's right. Not what it sounds like. It sounds like he either way, it's about premature ejaculation, clearly. But it sounds like he just like, I think it's supposed to be like he hits, it's basically love them, leave them, but
right. Right, and which is on, like, on the same album. I love that they both, right. Like, it just shows you how conceptually bankrupt they were, that you've got two songs on the same album, one's by Gene and one's by Paul, and they're both about the same thing.
Right. But even Love Them, Leave Them sounds more like boastful than I come really quick and then leave. That's why the ladies gossip behind my back and call me Mr. Speed.
Call me Mr. Speed. And that's kind of what the experience of seeing Kiss is like. I honestly...
It's a chore.
Well, yeah, I
that off my list.
I was, the whole week, I was trying to like psych myself up. I was like,
right, that's how I was too.
I don't think I'm ready for this. It was just like, we're seeing Kiss on Sunday. Like, I just wish we could just stay home. But yeah, there were some really hilarious moments. I will definitely say that. From, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of Paul Stanley's stage banter, so that was exciting to witness it in person. I was a little disappointed he didn't do the whole routine before a cold gin about like naming all the different alcohols.
I don't think his throat could take it. His vocal cords could not handle it anymore.
Yeah, there definitely wasn't. He didn't make the microphone blow out going hi.
Right. My favorite thing about that is that both Paul and Gene are like insufferably straight edge.
I know, they're so like, they like, have maybe a glass of wine, but so it's like, so it's just, you know, you're being pandered to. It's
right.
Like...
Right. Can we talk about how Gene kept swallowing the entire microphone?
I was just,
if it was a bulbous headed penis.
I was just going to bring that up. Like,
that was new. I've never seen that. That was new from Rock the Nation. So they did change up their performance a little bit in 15 years.
It got sexier. Yeah, the first time
quite possibly the least sexy thing I've ever seen is an old man with like probably like fucking onion breath putting a microphone in his mouth.
Yeah, it was it happened multiple times.
Yeah, it happened the first time and I didn't like, I kind of like blocked it out. I don't think I saw that.
Right.
It happened so quickly that I was just like, did that happen? I don't think so. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
And then it's like, pretend that didn't happen. And then he did it again, like a couple songs later. And I'm like, no, this is unmistakable. I'm actually viewing this. Why?
And I'm not sure like what is the innuendo? Like what?
Why? That's what
on a woman's body is the size of a stage microphone?
The size and shape of a microphone. And like what?
Like, what is it giving him the benefit of a doubt? It's a giant clitoris. Like that's the only thing it could be. But even then,
your complete mouth on it like that. There's nothing on a woman's body that like.
Right, and I will also say that
requires or even warrants you to put your entire like swallow it. Like he like faked it.
Right, and I've listened to every Kiss song ever recorded. And none of them have led me to believe that any member of the band knows what the clitoris is. So I call bullshit on that, on the mic being a clit standing.
However, they were comparing dicks and slapping dicks on each other's
exactly
shoulders.
Yeah,
so.
Exhibit B. That's all I'm saying. We've gotten in trouble for talking about the homoeroticism of Kiss before. I'm not saying anything.
We're not about... like the thing is, we don't have to say shit. They wrote it. It's in their book. They literally wrote it. In all four of their books, they talked about this.
And we're not saying there's anything wrong with it. That's the other thing.
Like, I would actually prefer them to be a gay band. We talk about that too. Yeah. I would rather them be gay.
I
really don't want them to have sex with women, to be honest with you. Clearly, they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
I don't want them to have sex with anybody else. I want them to keep it contained within themselves. So it's, you know, so it's like nobody else has to worry about.
Yeah, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
So, like, speaking of homoeroticism, we also have to talk about the part where Gene was like wagging his tongue at Tommy. Yes, he was like so very flirtatious.
This kind of ties into what I was saying, which is like, why the microphone, why the tongue wagging and like the gyrate? Like, it wasn't sexy. It wasn't cute. Why?
Tommy did not seem into it. I have to say.
It's just, I don't understand why that needed to be included. I don't see the purpose of it.
So yeah, there were a few kind of, you know, stomach turning.
Like, was that supposed to be where, like, when an artist does something and like everyone scream, like girls scream or whatever? Yeah, like, I remember watching like the live T-Rex videos at Wembley. He would do kind of like cute stuff, like whatever. What was Gene trying to accomplish with that?
I think just
it definitely didn't raise excitement.
I think just the whole crowd recoiling. I think
the only thing it arose in me was like bile in my throat. He put the whole microphone in his mouth. It was like in the back of his throat. Why?
Yeah.
Did they dispose that microphone after the show? Yeah.
No one's gonna use that. Hopefully, they at least disinfected it. Like. Is there anything else? What else did we? I feel like we've hit most of the, you know,
well,
Risto.
My favorite
keep
part.
Keep rotating the mic.
my favorite part, honestly, was like not even part of the show. It was the beginning when they were playing the most like random playlist at the beginning of the show, and they played Celebration by Kool and the Gang.
Oh.
And those like trailer park people in front of us were dancing to it.
Yeah, the crowd. Oh, so I mean, the crowd. I was expecting the crowd to be really interesting, and the crowd was really interesting. Like, I put some videos on Facebook, and some of them got taken down because they're like copyright issues. There were definitely like three or four dudes in front of us who were all extremely shirtless. Like spiritually shirtless.
Yeah, like shirtless is part of their personality.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
What they're wearing or not.
It's
wearing.
Not just that they pop their shirt off. It's like this is.
It's who they are as a person.
Right. I was really it was weird that they played Kool and the Gang. It was weird that people danced to it.
Well, most people didn't. It was literally just that one guy, and his two buddies.
There's another guy playing. I remember they were playing Another One Bites the Dust, and there was a guy playing air guitar to the bass riff, which was interesting.
what was he wearing too? Was it? Did he have like a do-rag on?
I think he had like a bandana. Okay. Yeah.
I just read do-rag into that.
Like a white trash version of the do-rag, you know.
Except like not functional, just.
Right. Yeah. So
a statement.
There were people in costume, although you know, like not as many as you might expect. But there were definitely I definitely saw a lot of makeup. I remember at one point there was this like kind of portly Gene Simmons who seemed lost. He was like wandering around.
My theory with that is that he just like had been wandering since the gathering of the Juggalos. Yeah. Like, because he looked like a Juggalo. Yeah. So I think he just like,
it actually wasn't Gene Simmons makeup, it was Juggalo makeup that melted.
Well, no, so... yeah. What I was gonna say is he just changed his clown makeup.
Yeah,
he went from one clown event to the other one. It literally looked like he had just been like, he left Indiana after the gathering of the Juggalos got literally smoked out, and right. Then just like was walked to Bristow, Virginia, and was like, oh, a Kiss concert.
Yeah.
Mm. Good thing I got this clown white makeup on.
Right. I saw several families there, which that is something interesting, and that is something I have to hand it to Kiss. You know, and they talk about this.
They're like, a family band.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you want to take your children? Like, wouldn't you want to take Remy to a show where an elderly man sticks a microphone into the back of his throat several times on stage and gyrates it? It's fun for everyone.
Yeah, it's just good, clean, wholesome fun. Yeah, but I mean, they talk about this, about like how they have appeal across generations. And it was a very... Like if we had gone and seen the Eagles, there wouldn't have been any kids there, you know, and we would have definitely been the youngest people there.
We also would not have made it through the whole show from the Eagles.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't have. I mean,
at the very least, I would have taken a nap.
I would have stayed for Joe Walsh's solo set and then probably bounced. But you know, like there's bands that are like contemporaries of Kiss. That don't have appeal to younger kids, and Kiss do, and there were kids that were really into it, and you know, hopefully it was like it was like everything that they wanted it to be. The you know, the cynical side of me though is it's sort of like it's a little sad that like a 40-year-old Kiss, the band at this stage of their career, is exciting to kids. Like it seems like I would personally want my kids to have something of their own to get excited about, you know. Right. It feels a little bit like you know, when you like force your kids to be into Star Wars or whatever, because that's what you were into when you were their age.
I thought it was weird when Paul Stanley said this song came out in 1983. Some of you weren't even born back then, but you all know what it's about. Lick it up, and then launched to a song about blowjobs. I was like, that's a bit strange. Like, I wasn't born in 83 either, and I'm old enough to like know what a blowjob is, obviously. Right. But some of these kids weren't, obviously. Like, obviously.
I mean, in fairness,
knows
I'm not
what it's about.
I'm not sure that there are any Kiss songs that aren't about blowjobs. So, you know, the pickings were slim. Like,
I get that, but just, it wasn't even like, just fucking play the song. You don't have to you don't have to be weird about it.
Just let us hear the blowjob song without you drawing attention to the fact that it's a blowjob right. song. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like this was like a bucket list kind of thing. And it's also, you know, like, I won't even say that it's marking the end of an era, because I'm sure we're still going to talk.
We're going to talk about Kiss next month.
Yeah. But, you know, it felt like, okay, we need to do this. Like, we just, and I don't regret it. It was not a bad show.
Because there's so many people who die that I never was able to see them. And this doesn't make up for that, because right. it actually kind of makes me angry that the only band really that I've seen has been fucking Kiss. I didn't get to see Prince, David Bowie, any of those people, but I saw Kiss.
Right.
But it is what it is. Grasping at the,
yeah, I mean, the you know, scraps, you take what you can get.
The scraps that are left. Point.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have to say that I do feel like this is it. Like this, if they do decide to extend the tour, I'm not going to go again. If they like,
it's going to be the same goddamn thing.
Exactly.
If they haven't changed in 15 years, they're not going to change for a second leg of the tour.
Right. If nothing else, I'll just rewatch Rock the Nation again. So I do feel like this was my first and last Kiss concert, but I don't regret going. And, you know, I think I would, anybody who doesn't actively, like if somebody actively hated Kiss, this show would not win them over. Like, I know that that's kind of like the cliche about Kiss is like, you have to see them live. And I think that that's true in 1975. I don't know if that's yeah, true.
It's actually, at this point, it's better if you stick to the studio. Listen to a live.
Right. That's the closest you'll, if you're ever going to understand why people like Kiss so much, the closest you'll come is probably listening to not even any of their live albums, just literally just a live. Like that's right. And if you don't get it then you're not going to get it. Like, don't put yourself through the experience of having to sit there in person. But,
and if you don't get it, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, you're not missing that much.
Yeah. You're probably better for it.
Right. It's really our fault, like, that we have, like, this is actually it's a kind of mental illness, I think, that forces us to do these things, like listen to all of Kiss's music or read all of their autobiographies or, you know, record podcasts about all of them. It's really like, you should pity us, I think, is the real message here.
It's funny to think about, like, their shows from like 74, which were those were much more interesting to me because they were less like planned out. Like when I was talking about this a little bit with the guitar, because Paul, like, he smashed a guitar at the end.
Oh,
but
right.
It was just so contrived.
Yeah.
And everything was just so like robotic and planned. Like, like he's acting like he's going to smash it and he like swings it around, which, by the way, I think that's how he fucked his shoulder up. Like, why don't you just stop doing that? It's not that exciting.
Yeah.
But he like windmills the guitar around, acts like he's going to smash it. And then he looks at the audience and kind of like shrugs. And then he smashes the guitar in one hit. And it's like, all right, great. You smash a guitar. Like, it's not exciting. It just is like something he does because he does that on every single show.
Yeah. I just, there's this weird
schedule.
Like when Pete Townsend smashed his guitar for the first time, he did it by accident. He like lifted his guitar up and it hit the ceiling and broke. And then he was like, well, fuck it. And he smashed it, you know? So it's like guitar smashing is supposed to be this spur of the moment kind of rock and roll thing. And of course, Kiss in like classic Kiss form have turned it into this weird, like corporate spectacle. Like, you know, they've got, I'm sure, just like a truckload of cheap guitars,
right,
that Paul picks up and, you know, may or may not actually play during the show, and then smashes. It's like a scripted moment. It's such a perfect like metonym for the whole Kiss phenomenon,
right.
You know, it's like there's no, That's all you need to know about this band is that they have a scripted guitar smashing moment in every show that they play.
Right. And like even like the specifically Kiss things they do, like the blowing fire, like Gene blowing fire. Oh, now it's God of Thunder. So
right.
Gene's going to spit out
it's
like a mouthful of blood capsule and...
It's this big production, and I love like, I don't know if it's like the character that he's made up for the demon or whatever, but he does this thing where he's like a baby bird or something. Like he the way that he moves his head, it's so goofy.
And then like his stupid little samurai knot like wiggles.
Yeah, it's very goofy. We knew what we were getting into, and we got what we asked for. And what else is there to say, you know? So yeah, Callie mentioned earlier, we're reading another book. We're reading George Clinton's autobiography, which we started and aborted probably a year ago. I don't remember exactly when, but.
Well, we had talked about doing it, I think, last July, and then just neither of us got the book.
So. Yeah, we just didn't get around to it. But Callie actually read it, and I have started it, and I will read it. So that's going to be the next thing. So. Yeah, if anybody is interested in reading along with us, it'll probably take us a couple of weeks to get this up. So yeah, check out the book is called what is the book called? Brothers,
it's Brothers Be Yo, George, ain't that fucking kind of hard on you or something like that. Something I remember I read it wrong the first couple of weeks I was reading it. I thought they were saying Brothers Be Yo, George.
Yeah.
But instead it's Brothers Be Yo George. I think that's what it is.
So just Google George Clinton Brothers Be that, or just George Clinton book, because he's only written one. So, you know, if you have any questions, if there's anything you want us to talk about, you know where to find us. And if you don't know where to find us, then we'll tell you right now. So on Twitter, we're Dystopian Tweets for the whole... you know, the official Twitter. And then I'm at ZC Hoskins, HOSKINS. And Callie.
I'm not giving my Twitter out anymore. Y'all motherfuckers are irritating. I'm just going to end up blocking you.
You're probably already blocked by Callie. So, you can find us at Dystopian Tweets, or on Facebook, we're Dystopian Dance Party. On Tumblr, I think we're Dystopian Dance Party. I don't really know. Tumblr's kind of whatever.
I don't even sign into Tumblr anymore.
Yeah, and then sometimes I haven't updated the Instagram in a while, but we do have an Instagram, and it's called Dystopian Gram. So I'll probably update it for this. As you can tell, we're very serious about our social media presence. So so we'll see you in a couple weeks, and when we talk about George Clinton.